This podcast is brought to you by our new Free America t-shirt. Whether you're buying dad a gift for Father's Day or you need a new t-shirt for this summer, this is the most patriotic, perfect shirt around. It's made in America and the price is right. Go to HowieCarShow.com, click store, and get your Free America shirt today.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
I will use my voice in the most uplifting way possible. And do everything in my power to educate my community.
If you ask me, it sounds like a cult.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Boston police and protesters coming together. Officers, you see here, taking a knee following calls from the crowd.
Suddenly, I feel all sweet and warm and fuzzy.
You're a disgrace to this department and to that badge on your chest.
Who's your captain? Howie Carr.
Stop lying to us about using tear gas. We saw it. It happened.
Maybe they didn't have tear gas. I don't know, but they had the elements of it.
My option is to displace the mayor of New York City and bring in the National Guard.
The National Guard should not be brought here. The people of New York City are much more powerful than anything the National Guard could do.
I don't know what planet Mayor de Blasio parachuted in from, but I don't see him carrying his happy ass down there and trying to protect people.
Unchained and unstoppable.
77-year-old David Dorn, a retired St. Louis police captain, was found dead.
Come on, this somebody granddaddy called. Oh, some TV. He gone, bro. Oh, some TVs, cuz.
Yes, America is burning, but that's how forests grow.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
Welcome to the Howie Carr Show. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number from anywhere, 844-500-4242. New charges were filed against the cop, Derek Chauvin, I guess this is how it's pronounced. He's the cop who had his knee on George Floyd's throat for 8 minutes. He's been hit with new second-degree murder charges, and the three other ex-cops who were around the scene that day, Memorial Day, they've also been charged now as accomplices in the racially charged case. That's just this afternoon. 844-500-4242. It was somewhat better last night. There were problems around the country, but it was not quite as bad in most places as it was Sunday and Monday nights. That's when it seems to have peaked. And so we'll see how it goes tonight. But it's knock on wood, seems to be quieting down a little bit. So we got a lot to talk about there. So there's some interesting stories about the looting and about some of the Antifa types. Boy, are they dumb, some of these people. I don't know. Grace, have you been following any of these stories?
Yeah, Howie, I've been following the Antifa stories, but I think the story that struck me most, which Taylor was brilliant enough to put into the introduction, was the story of David Dorn, the retired St. Louis police captain who was killed by looters. CNN, according to Fox, CNN did not mention David Dorn at all on their network. He was a black police officer. Police captain. He was retired, and I think he came back to try to help, and he was shot in the hip, and he died.
His friend owned the pawn shop, so he said, "I'll guard the pawn shop for you." And he was, again, like you say, he was 77 years old, and so the looters came by. They decided they were going to get some new TV sets to commemorate the memory of George Floyd, and he tried to stop them, and they killed him. And CNN's given it a good leaving alone. You want to know another guy that's they're not talking about? Dave Patrick Underwood. Have you been following that case?
I don't think I know that one, Howie.
I think President Trump mentioned him, maybe without mentioning his name. He was 53 years old. He was killed in riots in in Oakland, California. That was late last week. And they're not talking about him. I'll tell you another one they're not talking about is Italia Marie Kelly. She was a black woman in Davenport, Iowa. She just stopped by one of the rallies or demonstrations, protests, riots, whatever you want to call it. And it was getting a little out of hand, so she decided to walk away. And she got hit in the head with a bullet. One of the peaceful protesters pulled out a gun and killed her. She was 22 years old.
And Howie, have you noticed that something I've noticed, is especially from Charlie Baker, and I'm actually going to play the cut here. Let's play cut 35 from Governor Charlie Baker today.
I think anybody who's watched these events or witnessed them appreciates the fact that the vast majority, and I mean like the vast majority of the people who are part of these protests, are there to make a point and to make it peacefully. That is so obvious, I'm amazed that anybody could say anything other than that, at least here in Massachusetts.
Howie, the thing I want to bring up here is, does he not see the irony of saying the vast majority of these protesters were peaceful, and basically what he's saying is a few bad actors are ruining their reputation? What about the fact that a cop who's not even from Massachusetts is now creating a race war in Massachusetts, and we're not going to say that there are bad apples in the police system, but not all police? It amazes me that more people aren't bringing up.
And he's talking about that there's not a problem. I mean, I just got an email from somebody, and a reporter that I used to work with, and she said that Boylston Street looks like after the Boston Marathon bombing in 2013. The level of devastation. I mean, maybe not death, but certainly the property damage, all the windows busted out. You know, here's another another person they're not talking about on the alt-left networks. Chris Beatty, 38-year-old real estate broker, former Indiana University football player. He was shot and killed by looters in Indianapolis. He tried to stop two hoods, thugs that were robbing women, older women, of their purses. And he said, you don't need to do this. There's a better way. And they shot him. They shot him. So, you want to talk about the peaceful protesters and everything's being done right. But that's not the whole story.
No, exactly. And these Antifa protesters, a lot of them are white people who are claiming that they're doing all of this good and that they're trying to help the movement. And a lot of black people have spoken up against them and said, you're putting our community in harm's way because you're inciting violence and we could get hurt. And I saw a video the other day, Howie, on Twitter of a mother, a black mother, who took a brick from one of her children's hands and brought it over to a car full of white guys and said, why did you give him this brick? So they're trying to create, these Antifa people are trying to create these problems, and it's not appreciated by anyone on either side, I don't think.
I have to lighten it up, though, a little bit, Grace.
Oh, please do.
There's a story in Chicago. I don't know if you saw this guy. His name is Timothy O'Donnell, and he's 31 years old. And he was recorded on videotape.
Oh, I know this.
He put on a Joker's mask, like from Batman, a Joker's mask, and then he went out on the street and he had a Molotov cocktail, gasoline, and he set a police vehicle on fire.
Oh, I'm thinking of something else, but go ahead.
So he posed, you know, and he was very proud of himself because he was wearing that mask, and he thought, how could they ever find him because he was wearing the mask? But he forgot that he has a tattoo on his neck that says pretty.
Oh, no.
And so the cops just came and they got him. And then there was another guy in Illinois who was, distributing explosives in Minneapolis and Chicago. And he too posed for some social media, smiling. Do you know how they got him, Grace?
Don't tell me another tattoo.
Gold teeth.
Oh.
and how about...
And normally I'm so for both of those things. I'm such a fan of tattoos and gold teeth. It's a shame that in this case, they took down these nice
Very
young
fake.
Fellas.
And my favorite one, though, is the kid that worked at Amazon. Do you hear about him? I think his name was Brian Bartels. He's from suburban Pittsburgh.
Oh, yes. I did hear about this one.
And he was turned in by his mom.
Aww.
And the cops came and they took him out of his basement.
You're never too old for mom and dad to walk you to the police station.
They found his Antifa bandana and his black sweatshirt on the top of mom's washing machine. He wanted to get ready for the next riot.
Mom, can you wash my sweatshirt? Hey, Howie, I also wanted to mention the video that went viral yesterday. I think it was either Jared or Taylor who showed it to me. There's these kids and they're in their apartment and they're looking down and they see the protesters walking by and they're white people and they want to show their support.
They're like Brian Bartels and
yes.
Timothy O'Donnell and all these other, they're just goofballs.
Yeah, so they start giving them the thumbs up. Go, go, guys, we support you. And then a few moments later, a brick goes through their window, shatters everything, and they stick their heads out their shattered windows and they say, "We're on your side, we're on your side," and another brick comes through the window. And here's the point, guys. If a lot of these, and I'm not going to say protesters because there are good protesters, but these rioters, they're not using sense right now. They don't care if you're, you know, if you're a nice person. It's just destruction mode. And Howie, also there was a story yesterday. You always say rebellions eat their own.
Yes.
Robespierre. I know that's one of your favorite references, and I thought you'd appreciate this story.
He was the last guy to be chopped off in the Reign of Terror, to have his head chopped off.
So how yesterday on social media, a lot of people and celebrities were posting a black square to reference and pay homage to Black Lives Matter. And so a lot of people did it, a lot of friends of mine, a lot of celebrities, and it seemed like it was all for, you know, people were doing it to try to help, I guess. And then I see this story come out, and it says Emma Watson, we know her from Harry Potter, speaks out after criticism for initial Blackout Tuesday Instagram posts. Now, follow this. Emma Watson, who is, I believe, part of the UN, she's like a UN ambassador or something, posted, rather than posting one black square, posted three black squares, which people thought was a way for her to make her feed look more aesthetically pleasing. And so they got mad at her and they said that she was only trying to be a performative activist and not really was looking to carefully curate her account and make it look better and not actually trying to get the message out there. So she basically got canceled.
Too many people living in their basements. It's not just Brian Bartels in suburban Pittsburgh.
Howie, it's amazing seeing all of these activists cancel each other for everything. In the morning, they were posting the black squares, and at night, they were posting about how the black squares aren't actually helpful because it messes with It's just insanity.
When we come back, we're going to tell you about some of the looting that's been going on. I mean, some of it's pretty involved. I mean, it's organized, shall we say, very organized. But we'll be right back. If you're thinking about replacing your carpets due to pet stains and odors, you must try Genesis 950 first. It breaks down the bonds of stains and odors so they're gone from carpets and padding for good. You can use it in a carpet cleaning machine, and it's green, so it's safe for family and pets. It's the go-to cleaner for when Mr. Gooner has an accident, as older dogs often do. Mr. Gooner's in a different place than I am right now, but my assistant down here in Florida, he's got two dogs, and I gave him some of the Genesis 950. McKay, is it pretty good?
Yeah, it works really well. And with my two dogs, I have a Collie and a Shetland Sheepdog. One's a larger size, one's a smaller size, and it helps get the odor out. It doesn't really matter on the size of the breed. It kills the odor. The puppy's had some accidents in the house, and I use a Miracle Cleaner, and he hasn't gone in the house. It helps kill the scent for the housebreaking.
Yeah, you know, as we all know, replacing carpet, replacing padding, it's very expensive, and you don't want to have to keep doing it over and over again if you got pets or any other kind of stains. So what you want to do, you can save yourself a lot of money and a lot of hassle by buying some Genesis 950. 1 gallon of industrial strength Genesis 950 makes up to 7 gallons of cleaner, and it's not just for pet stains, it's a disinfectant that kills viruses. It's also great for kitchens, garages, grease stains, wheels, tires, and more. Save yourself the trouble and the expense of going to the carpeting store and seeing your or going to your favorite supermarket and seeing your favorite cleaner sold out again. It's made in America, Genesis 950. And as we like to say, buy American, support America. Order a gallon direct at Genesis950.com. That's the number 950. Genesis950.com. Enter code Howie to get more than a $10 value in savings, including a spray bottle and free shipping. That's Genesis950.com. Enter code Howie. It's good if you have a dog, and it's good if you don't have a dog. I'm Howie Carr.
He didn't come here to be made sport of. Howie Carr.
This is Deb in Danielson, Connecticut.
This is Greg in Boston, Mass.
This is Elizabeth in Wakefield, Massachusetts, and this is the Howie Carr Show.
Experience the amazing benefits of Super Beets. I'm holding it up right now. Get a free 30-day supply, free shipping, and free nitric oxide strips to test your nitric oxide levels with your first purchase when you visit www.superbeatsradio.com/Howie. That's www.superbeatsradio.com/Howie. Taylor, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
If you were a police officer, would you kneel before protesters?
No, I don't think I would. I mean, you know, I've never been in that situation, and I don't know what it's like when you're dealing with a screaming mob of Antifa types. But and Officer Mark says you can't do it because you lose command presence. It's a sign of weakness, in other words. So I'm going to say no, I would not do it.
Yeah, to me, law and order is about law and order, not choosing a side. 51% say no, they would not kneel.
51%, that's all. Okay. Our polls are going a little askew from what they normally go lately. I don't know what's going
on. That's a good poll, then. It's good to have a poll that's a little bit more down the middle, Howie.
Maybe we have some new woke listeners.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's good. We welcome you to the world of non-wokeness here. Grace, I have to mention here the man who died trying to blow up the ATM in North Philadelphia. Did you see that one?
I did not see that. I saw a guy trying to bring an ATM onto a public bus, but I did not see this one.
No, the 24-year-old whose name has not been released. His name hasn't been released, but we have a statement from his mother, don't we, Taylor?
He's a good boy, a very good boy.
He suffered massive trauma to his upper body after placing an explosive in a sidewalk-facing ATM outside a sports bar along North 2nd Street near Susquehanna Avenue at 6:15 a.m. 6:15, that's pretty much dawn, right? He was so brazen that he felt like he could blow up an ATM outside of a sports bar at sunrise. Well, he couldn't. He won't be down for breakfast. So what else have you got for us, Grace?
Howie, I wanted to let everyone know that it's a great day to get our brand new t-shirt, Free America. It's made in America. It's very 4th of July themed. I really love it. If you're in Free America like Howie, or if you're not in Free America like us at the studio, check out the t-shirt, HowieCarshow.com. Click on the store, get your t-shirt today. Howie, this is a great story, and I think you'll get a kick out of it. Governments and the WHO changed COVID-19 policy based on suspect data from tiny U.S. company. Okay? A Guardian investigation can reveal the U.S.-based company Surgisphere, whose handful of employees appear to include a science fiction writer and an adult content model, has provided data for multiple studies on COVID-19 co-authored.
How are they any less reliable than Neil Ferguson, who said 2.2 million Americans were going to die, 500,000 in the U.K.?
They have failed to adequately explain its data or methodology. Data it claims to have legitimately obtained from more than 1,000 hospitals worldwide that have led to changes in COVID-19 treatment policies in Latin America. It was also behind a decision by the WHO and research institutes around the world to halt trials of the controversial drug hydroxychloroquine. On Wednesday, the WHO announced those trials would now resume. In other words, they got their advice from this strange, small
yeah.
company, and now models, they're resuming.
Models don't mean anything. Models are like polls. They're worthless.
This is
and you know what I hear from
news.
Whenever I hear anything from The Who, you know what I say? Won't get fooled again.
Exactly.
I'm Howie Carr.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Sean Spicer used to be the press secretary for President Donald Trump. He was Donald Trump's first press secretary. And now he has his own show nightly on Newsmax. He's on at 6 o'clock Eastern time. And he's got a big get this week. So we're going to have him on. We're going to talk about some other issues. But first, I'll let him tell you who he's got coming up as his special guest very soon. Sean, thanks for being with us here on the Howie Carr Show. And welcome to my show on Newsmax. We'll look forward to hearing your guest. Who have you got coming up?
Oh, it's great to be back with you, Howie. I've got a political figure you might have heard of, Donald Trump. He's the president of the United States, and we had an opportunity to sit down with him for a while this morning and run through the gamut of issues.
Oh, so it's going to be on tonight.
Oh, yeah, 6 o'clock. Tune in. Set your DVR, man.
How long? How long do you have him for?
We had him for about 25 minutes. So we were able to cover the current situation that's happening right now from all sides, meaning we talked about the protests. We talked about the killing of George Floyd. We talked a little China. We talked about social media and the censorship of the right, his recent executive order. And then, Howie, the thing that I did that I really was, when I scheduled this, what I wanted to do more of was really talk about him as a person. And I asked him, you know, you always speak fondly of your father. What would he think to see his son sitting here as president of the United States? I asked him about the First Lady's influence. And it was interesting because I think that we forget sometimes that these people who go from one job to president of the United States go through an evolution. And it's interesting to find out how that's been for them.
Did you ask him about the controversy about the Bible? I mean, they accuse him of using a prop, and these are the same people who've been wearing masks as a form of virtue signaling for months at a time at end here. Did you ask him about that? Little dispute with and walking through Lafayette Park, the big lie that the media promoted that there was tear gas used. Did you get into any of that?
Well, so here's what I did. I literally just said to him, tell us why you went to St. John's and what did it mean to you? I wanted him to answer the question. My view is this is where the media gets it wrong so often. They try to come in with a charged question. I just asked him plain and simple, why did you go? What did it mean to you? And then I asked him also, I said, look, let me ask you about your faith. Have you grown in your faith since you've become president? And do you pray often? And really tried to get at the heart of who he is as a person and why, you know, because they want to talk about it being a photo op. I want to know what's in his heart. And, and how his faith has evolved since becoming president.
Did you ask him anything about the Durham investigation? And I know Rosenstein was probably testifying while you were talking to him. But did he have any thoughts about what's going to happen next with John Durham? Whether they're going to be indictments or a report or anything like that about Russiagate?
He didn't specifically get into John Durham or the investigation that he is doing of the whole Mueller probe, but he did talk about the Democrats and the hoaxes and all of this and what they've done. I asked him how he's funny. I said, who's the toughest person that you've negotiated with? And I'll give you a little bit of a hint here. So I expected him to say one of the world leaders. And he said, you know, everyone says to me, they probably think it's Xi Jinping or Putin. It's the Democrats because this is the kind of stuff that they do. They say they want to work with you. And then they create these fake hoaxes. And he went through a litany it was fascinating to hear a guy who's done all these big negotiations and why he thinks they're the toughest people to work with.
Isn't it amazing when you sit down with him and he just has a grasp of so many issues? And, you know, they portrayed him during the campaign and in the early years of this term as some kind of ignoramus and a guy who was just sitting in the Oval Office watching TV and eating cheeseburgers. But he can micromanage any issue that you bring up, can't he?
Yeah, I think this thing is so fascinating when, you know, you get an opportunity to be with him. I had an opportunity, obviously, to work for him. And you watch somebody process all that information. And he's not sitting there with notes and briefing books. He digests stuff and synthesizes it in a way that I've been staffing politicians for decades. And he sits there, and to your point, we went through in 25 minutes all these issues. And he could point to different things. Before I even got the question out, he would say something like, well, more to it than that, and da, da, da. He really was on point, and that's something to what you're saying, that these guys in the media want him to pretend that he doesn't know what he's doing, that he doesn't have the experience, and yet over and over again, he proves a depth of knowledge of all of these issues that no one who didn't have a strong command of them would be able to do.
What kind of mood do you think he's in? I mean, he's getting pummeled from every side. First, it was this COVID-19 and the blue states refusing to open. Now it's predominantly the blue states that are being roiled by these riots. What's his mood as his poll numbers are up and down? I mean, his support is totally solid, unlike Joe Biden's, but he's still in kind of a wobbly position. I know he was wobbly in 2016 as well, but he was before this whole COVID-19 started. He seemed to be in a very strong position. How's he feeling, do you think?
I think he feels good. I think I've never seen a politician care less about the day-to-day polls. He knows his base is strong, and he knows that he's got a record to run on and to stand on. And so, you know, he's very confident, and he doesn't get swayed by what's going to, you know, when you ask him why he's doing something, he generally says because it's the right thing to do. And he's not sitting there trying to figure out how something was, you know, focus grouped or poll tested. I think he was, you know, he clearly, he had a lot on his mind today, and I could feel the weight of the presidency and all that's going on now weigh on him. But there was also a degree of focus that is really interesting that he had. But I think he felt good. He's making a very strong case about why Biden is not fit to be president. And he also, you know, it's funny, you talk about being attacked. I led off this interview, and I'll give you another glimpse here, but I said to him, look, you as president have this great record with African Americans. You've increased funding for HBCUs. You passed opportunity zones. You passed criminal justice. As a developer, you built one of the first clubs in Palm Beach that actually welcomed blacks and Jews when no one else did it. And yet now you're being attacked as somebody who doesn't appreciate this. And you know, he said, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up because Joe Biden's been in the Senate for almost four decades. And he talks about systemic racism. I've been elected president 3 years. And you're going to tell me that I'm to blame when he was there for 40 years and did nothing?
Right. And you know, when he opened Mar-a-Lago, Sean, you know this, but he's diagonally across the street from the Bath and Tennis Club, one of the oldest WASP places, establishments in on the island. They hated him. They sued him. They didn't like people like P. Diddy and J-Lo down on the beach, you know? And it was all written up over and over again, day after day in the New York Post, but now it's just been totally consigned to a black hole of memory. Nobody on the other networks ever brings any of this stuff up. That he was he might as well have been a civil rights crusader in Palm Beach.
Well, you know, it's funny, Howie. I always tell people, when you go to a Trump property, and I've had the opportunity to go to several now because of my work with him, you will find that most of the people there have worked there very, very long. And I'll say to them, you know, how long have you been here? Well, 10 years, 15 years, sometimes 20 years. And it's because they always say, oh, Mr. Trump's great to work for. Obviously, you know, now President Trump. But there is something that when you look at someone and you can see that, you realize that those aren't people who would be sticking around if there wasn't a degree of loyalty and respect that they felt was going both ways. And it's interesting because I think the media wants such a different narrative of who this guy is, and they hate the fact that he actually can show stuff, right? Well, Joe Biden can talk about his record, and I voted on this, and I tried to do this. Trump can actually say, at a time when it was not politically correct, when the tide, as you put it, at the Bath and Tennis Club was, you know, we're going to exclude everybody, Trump's view was, I'm going to welcome everybody. No one wants to tell that story.
No, they don't. Sean, I got to listen. Let me, before we go, I got to ask you one thing. How do you feel when you watch Kayleigh McEnany taking on the press every day? Do you ever feel like, damn, why didn't I do that? Or are you just amazed that she does it?
I think she's done a fantastic job. She's confident. She goes up there well prepared. There are days, of course, that I look and, you know, I think I try not to be one of those people that looks in the rearview mirror, but I think I would give her very high marks for how she's handling herself and representing the president. And I think, you know, I'm glad to see that. He's somebody that's really doing a great job. And, you know, I was proud of my time and I was glad to be able to serve the country in this administration. But I'm glad to be a viewer now than a briefer.
I think it's more fun to watch her than it is to just be standing up there and taking the slings and arrows of the Jim Acostas of the world. So who was there today when you did the interview? Anybody?
Just our camera crew. It was the president, myself, sitting in the diplomatic room of the residence of the White House. And like I said, it's airing tonight in about an hour.
No Kayleigh? So, no Kayleigh? No Meadows?
No, listen.
Nobody?
Nope. No, I mean, there was a press aide that followed him in and left the room. Look, I staffed this president. He is not a guy that waits for his aides to come in and help him. He is in complete control of the interview from beginning to end. He tells you when he's had enough and when it's over, and he tells you when it starts. So this is not a guy that needs staffing.
Where's the convention going to be? Did he say anything about that? You know, now that Roy Cooper has thrown it out of Charlotte.
I was so, that was the one question that I didn't have time for. That I think that, look, my guess, if I had to venture a guess right now, I say the delegates meet in Charlotte and then do the business of the convention in the first day, and then the president accepts the nomination in another city.
Probably Florida or Texas.
A
state with a lot of electoral votes. That he needs. Yeah. So that's.
But I think that's my. I mean, if I had to guess it out, I think that's probably what's going to happen.
Okay, Sean, we look forward to seeing your report tonight, your sit-down interview with the president. That'll be at 6 o'clock Eastern time on Newsmax, just about an hour and 15 minutes from now. Not long at all. That's great. Good get, Sean Spicer. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And Sean Spicer, he's our Newsmax host and a former press secretary to President Donald J. Trump. Thank you, Sean. I'm Howie Carr.
The Howie Carr Show.
This is Paul in North Andover, Mass.
This is Luana in Lexington, Massachusetts.
This is Lauren in Augusta, Maine, and this is the Howie Carr Show.
844-500-4242. You know how they always tell us, the Democrats, that what could possibly go wrong with mail-in ballots? They're not going to be any problems whatsoever, you know? Well, they had the city municipal elections in Baltimore yesterday, and there was apparently a very tight race in one of the city council districts. And so they went to start count the mail-in votes in this close election in the city council. They had to throw them all out. Vote-by-mail ballot styles for District 1 could not be counted properly. They had to throw out all the write-in votes in this one district. So obviously, they're going to have the election. It looks to me like they're going to have the election over again. And it was two Democrat candidates. They weren't even trying to steal it from a Republican. They just couldn't do it properly. And this is this follows what's happened recently in Pittsburgh. State officials admitted that duplicate ballots had been mailed out to registered voters ahead of the election. And in Wisconsin, at least 30,000 mail-in votes were counted after Election Day. Thousands of mail-in votes had to be thrown out due to postmark issues, missing voter signatures, missing witness signatures. But there's no problem. It's not going to. What could possibly go wrong with mail-in voting? Arthur, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Arthur.
Thanks, sir. Thanks, Howie. Well, you know what? We've had voter fraud for God knows how long, and I've been screaming from the day that Trump got elected. He had to get the Supreme Court to rule on voter ID, and now I guess it's too late. And if nothing's done about this, he's not going to have much of a chance because they're already setting this up, saying it's a close election when it shouldn't be a close election. But, you know, it doesn't take much to turn election. You only need a few precincts in certain states, and you know how that works.
Yeah, look what 1960, Illinois and also Texas. And Lyndon Johnson was on the vice presidential ticket and he'd already gotten into the Senate by stealing that election back in 1948. A lot of history has been changed by stolen elections. You're right about that, Arthur. Thanks for the call. Dave, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, Howie, you're top shelf, man.
Thank you.
I was watching some of that hearing today. Very disappointed in Lindsey Graham.
Dave, you shouldn't have been expecting much from Lindsey Graham.
Well, you know, I heard there's a rumor that what we want. We want NASA to turn around the Hubble spacecraft and to search for his manhood because it shriveled up so small.
He's very good. He's very good on TV, and you know he talks a good game. But he when it comes to delivering, he doesn't do much. How about Rosenstein? He keeps saying, "Well, you know, if I'd have known, the FBI didn't give me the information I needed. McCabe didn't give me the information I needed." Dave, do you think he realizes that the FBI is part of the Department of Justice? I mean, he was basically the supervisor of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He can point all the fingers he wants at McCabe and Comey and whoever else, but no one's buying it. And again, he say I'm accountable. That's why I'm here, to pass the buck. I'm not responsible. And then he says, well, if I had known that everything was fraudulent, I never would have signed those FISA applications. Well, you know what? If the bank robber had known that they were going to slip some red dye into the bag and it was going to explode in the getaway car and that the surveillance camera was still working, he probably wouldn't have robbed the bank. I mean, I'm tired of this. I wasn't expecting much out of this, but it was pretty disappointing. I tried to watch it myself, and whenever a Klobuchar or a White House or a Feinstein would come on, I just turned down the sound. Not much happening there. Got to count on John Durham, the U.S. Attorney from Connecticut. I'm Howie Carr.